Welcome to Trust the Journey. I'm Melanie Curtis.
And I'm Jason Maletsky.
Thank you, legit, for joining us today.
Now, our mission is living and learning, laughing and loving together with you.
We're here to grow and contribute through our practice of openness, honesty, vulnerability, humility, and trust, trusting the entire journey.
Yeah, and on that journey, we often talk about plant medicines, psychedelics, and other avenues of healing. When we do, we are sharing for informational purposes only. We're not doctors or therapists, and we don't promote doing anything illegal.
Inside us all, we have a deep, powerful knowing. We encourage curiosity, healing, and exploration of this consciousness.
Damn straight. Together, our handle is trustthejourney.today. Individually, you can find her at melaniecurtis.com and me at jasonmaletsky.com.
Thank you all again so much for being with us. On to the show. Right on, fam. Okay, in today's episode, we are thrilled to welcome Anne Filippi. Born in Alsace, based in Berlin, Anne Filippi is a former author and reporter at Vanity Fair, GQ, and Vogue. She worked as a Silicon Valley correspondent for, here we go, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. I can't pronounce that. Basically, it's the New York Times of Germany. She's a very accomplished writer. She lived in Los Angeles for 6 years as a Hollywood reporter for GQ Germany. She wrote about the West Coast tech world in Silicon Valley. She discovered psychedelic-assisted therapy in 2019 and founded the New Health Club show podcast and newsletter. That created a space where people from the new psychedelic ecosystem and business world could talk about the disruptive power of psychedelics. By 2021, she was part of the 100 most important people in psychedelics and is part of the international psychedelic ecosystem and industry. Now, the New Health Club is working on introducing psychedelic tools back into society and culture, and is creating new narratives, podcasts, and products around the new health that we need in our world. She is also working on a new foundation to look at intergenerational trauma and psychedelic healing modalities. Anne, welcome. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I always like to be on American podcasts.
Yeah, totally.
It's more fun, mostly.
Crossing the proverbial pond. You know, I want to just jump right in, if you're cool with that.
Yeah.
Your bio says that you discovered psychedelic-assisted therapies in 2019. And I'm curious what that story is. Like, how did you discover these healing modalities? Because obviously it seems like that was a pivotal moment in your life and your career that made you seismically change directions in a really amazing, powerful way. And so I'm curious what your story is around that and, you know, take us there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it started when I came back from Los Angeles back to Berlin. And I realized that not only that I didn't want to be in media anymore, because that would have been my natural choice, but I also realized that there was something in me that I couldn't really name what it was. And sometimes this had raised his head in LA while I was doing Kundalini yoga every day, which was way too much. But it brought stuff to the surface. And but still I was very distracted by, you know, the celebrities in the Kundalini yoga. And it's a very interesting structure how this actually keeps you away from not really connecting to yourself and in this city, I found. So, but then back in Berlin, I realized, wow, this is something is happening. And then as we often know, before people engage in psychedelics, you can't really tell what it is. Like, but you know there is something. And then I really did another round of talk therapy. The first time I really got into a fight with a therapist, because I felt like, I mean, it was probably my fault that we got into the fight, because I was really bored by myself just repeating the same story. And then really somebody gave me the Michael Pollan book. And in the beginning, I didn't even connect it to my, like, yeah, to my own interests. But then I started, really started with the episode where he is looking into LSD. Then I closed the book and just tried to find a psychiatrist here in Berlin, which I found. And we had immediately like four, you know, preparation therapy sessions because he was a very educated and experienced psychiatrist and psychoanalyst. And I really knew I had to do something else. It was kind of, I'm not going to say it was desperate, but maybe it was more than I thought at the time. And and then one morning, on Saturday morning, other people go to the gym or to the farmer's market, I went to take LSD in this kind of a therapy place or in his practice. And pretty quickly after the onset, I think like after half an hour, I saw a life that was, I think, my happy life, but which was the absolute opposite of my life I actually had at the time.
Wow.
And so, and after this day, I mean, you know, it takes very long, an LSD experience, like up to 6 hours. It wasn't like I thought like, oh, I have to, you know, cut out everything, need to stop everything. But something had changed in a way that I wanted to pursue this further. But then, and then since then, I think it was in May 2019, then in that summer, I'd met Christian Angermeyer because I did a story about him for this Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung.
See, that's how you say it, everyone.
Yeah, nobody needs to learn this, please. I mean, it's insane. And he really supported me very early on with the podcast because we had a lot of conversations about psychedelics and, but just the two of it, not in a very private way, like because it wasn't at the time, it wasn't really out there yet that much. Mm-hmm. So, and then in 2019, if I look back at it now, like my life really started to transform. But what I like about it is that it wasn't this, you know, you come home from an experience and you're like, I have to rip everything apart. I have to hate everybody now that I know. But it was almost like, I want to say sometimes I didn't have to do something. It just happened. Things started to happen to me automatically. And then in 2020, I went the first time to the Netherlands and took a high dose of truffles at Synthesis back then. And pretty much after, like a week after, I went to Nuremberg to meet David Bronner. And we started to a conversation that they would sponsor the podcast. And then suddenly, a year later, after the first LSD experience, my life was completely transformed without me being like, you know, hunting it down for transformation, but it was.
Wow. So. You know, I think one thing that's amazing about your story and useful potentially for people who are listening is that how you said you were bored with yourself, that you were bored hearing the same story. Mm-hmm. Like we often think about psychedelic healing as like, oh, it has to be some deep, unalterable pain that we are so upset about. And those things are so, so relevant and important as well. But I like that invitation of I'm bored. I'm unfulfilled. I don't know why I keep talking about the same story.
Yeah.
That is just as relevant a reason to go toward healing as something that is rigorously painful. I love that.
But I mean, of course, as we know, then once you start to engage in this, you realize that there is a lot of pain in you.
Yes.
That can be shown to you as extreme boredom or extreme as a journalist, it's always good to be very cynical because it makes you very successful as a journalist.
Mm.
But it's just that I realized also at one point that's also why I didn't want to be anymore in this, at least German classic media world, because the more cynical you were or the more kind of condescending, the more successful you were, especially I have to say if you wrote about Hollywood, because people didn't want to hear that a Hollywood person was interesting or great. They wanted to hear like how superficial they are. And then you were really like, oh, read your article. It was so great because you wrote how stupid Michael Douglas is or something, right? But I stopped oh doing that. And then also my journalistic success became less because I started to not hate things anymore. So it was also something that happened.
So you mentioned Michael Pollan's book. Was that your opening to the whole concept and idea of exploring psychedelics?
Yeah, I mean, as everybody else here, I heard about it, and I've never done psychedelics. In my 30s, I had a very destructive relationship with a cocaine-addicted trust fund baby from Miami, and I thought, like, well, this is how a relationship probably is. But this was my idea of drugs that was presented to me. Like, you know, this is like a drug person
And they all got put into a pile together.
Exactly.
The concept of all drugs.
And I
all into this
had no idea about you know that there's. I mean, really, like there was a big difference between, let's say, cocaine and LSD and mushrooms. I was totally uninformed because I've never done it because I was always very terrified of it. But then with Michael Pollan, I mean, I think this is what a lot of people had that experience. It was such an accomplished writer. It was a writer. I could, you know, follow what he was, why he wanted to look into this. And also the way he wrote about it was so kind of serious, but not too serious, but then also not too woo-woo-ish kind of. And so the way he wrote about, especially LSD for some reason, I felt like maybe this is something that is not so scary also. And then, funny enough, one of the first podcasts we did was with Michael Pollan. And then he said, like, psychedelics are wasted on the young. And I was like, oh, wow, this is such a great guy. I totally agree. And suddenly it was this, I mean, you know how it is. America gives you, that's why I love it so much, I have to say it. It gives you this possibility of you can be open to many things. Not so much depending how old you are. Like in Europe, it's way more like, oh, yeah, you're already that old, so you shouldn't do this anymore. You should look like this anymore, and so on. So, and he had a really great way to just reintroduce, in that case, LSD as something that could actually just eventually help you to just take a step that you couldn't maybe take otherwise. So. And it was a great way of explaining what he did, I think.
So I think there's something really interesting here in this topic of kind of this age genre relationship to when we explore our minds and when we stop exploring our minds. And we have this idea in culture that, you know, once we pass our 30s, our 20s are long behind us, and self-exploration, self-discovery is done. And we are now who we are. And it's not safe to explore psychedelics or, you know, mind-expanding chemicals into our 40s or our 50s or even our 60s. And there's an interesting element here is that there's really low risk profile in LSD, psilocybin, any of these psychedelics have very low associated risks with, say, you know, a cardiac event or something that you might see from, say, a stimulant or a depressant, these other kinds of compounds. That risk profile is not there. So what it means is these are available to people in midlife, in later life, to continue starting to flower and to bloom and explore who we are.
Yeah, and I think, like, I mean, reading Michael Pollan was one thing, but then through a very weird coincidence, I met Amanda Fielding also, like, 2019. Uh-huh. I think, because I was seeing a guy that I met on a dating app and he looked like Hugh Grant, and I went to London and he was like, it was really like that. He was like, do you want to go for lunch with Amanda Fielding? I was like, do you mean this Amanda Fielding? So he took me to lunch with her to her place in Beckley Park. And I mean, she was then, I don't know, like 75, maybe 76. And of course it was incredibly fascinating because she was speaking like a TED talk. She was like, her mind was on. And meeting with her was also something that was had a big influence on me, because at one point we were sitting in her living room that looks like a Laurel Canyon living room, like from the 60s. And I don't know, the sun came in and I was like, okay, something is happening here. I don't really know what it's going to be, but this person has a huge influence on me. And after this, like, she even gave me advice. It was before the LSD trip. She gave me advice what I should do, like how much orange juice I should drink with the LSD to make it work better. So, and I was like, okay, like, I've never done it. So, and then we became, I mean, we were writing emails once in a while, and then she came on a podcast. And but seeing her also, exactly to your point, was like, wow, she dedicated her life to this. And that's what inspired me to do the same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's where I wanted to go next, because you obviously have such a rich career in media. And there can be this one singular narrow view of like, this is what media looks like. And I'm almost like, it makes so much sense that your experience in media would almost dovetail into something when you discovered this, like, this calling, this inspiration. And so I would love to hear how you started the New Health Club show, and tell us how that began. What did you do? I mean, not necessarily, you can share pragmatically what you did. It's not like we're trying to coach people on how to start a podcast, it's more like that idea, that inspiration of where you took it and how it started. And yeah, just tell us more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, if you think back at 2019, I mean, the book had come out, the Michael Pollan book, which was in America a really big thing, not so much in Europe. I mean, there had been research from Imperial College, from Robert Card Harris, but it was still like a nothing that people really knew about yet. So, and when it started to become, let's say, like a hot thing, like psychedelic startups, for example. But what I realized at the time, and this is also a conversation I had with Christian in the beginning, is that there was actually not really a language for this, because it was either like a very medical way of talking about it, or a very scientific way, which most people wouldn't really understand. I mean, even though I don't get everything if I listen to a very scientific talk on some conferences, or the other way was an extremely kind of, you know, kind of woo-woo way of talking about it, and just people who had one ayahuasca experience suddenly looked at themselves as a shaman. All of this kind of, you know, these two extremes, you could say.
Yeah.
And being at Condé Nast for, I mean, quite a bit, I realized, wow, what about if you really try to do a show around this and talk to these really incredible people, like scientists, investors, therapists, I mean, legends like Rick Doblin or Amanda, in a way as if they would be interviewed by, I don't know, CNN or maybe like what's the great nightlife show, nighttime show,
Nightline.
There's one guy, of course I always forget his name. It's not Bill Maher, but that kind
Letterman.
Of show, right? I mean, like, where you have other questions. It's also not Letterman, no. He's very he's very nasty sometimes, I think.
Keep guessing a million things.
Yeah, so, but I mean, like, I realized, so there's no, and let's call it entertainment factor to it, which means, and I'm a big fan of entertainment, because it actually means that people will listen and start to understand what you're talking about. So, and without being maybe entertained, but they still would listen because they are entertained. And I'm not saying that all of these interviews were really, you know, like super funny, or like, I mean, some topics are not super funny that are dealt with in psychedelics. But for example, I remember the podcast with Deborah Mash, And she's like a really interesting researcher for ibogaine. And so the way she talked about how they researched ibogaine in the 80s, 90s in her lab in Miami, it was like super, like a movie almost. Like, and then she said, yeah, and then we found a third molecule and we call it the Miami Vice molecule. And I was like, oh my God, like I can't stop. You have to tell me everything about this. And it became really fascinating. All these right. scientist stories, like, I mean, like, as we know, in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't like the cool thing. It was very difficult. Or with Rick kind of doing psychedelics with Stan Grof and Esalen, all of these stories that we also have to, you know, kind of hear today, that because nobody kind of asked those people about these stories at the time. So, yeah, so what I did and what I tried, and weirdly enough, supported through the pandemic, because we could do like a Zoom show because everybody had time and everybody could do Zoom, but it looked kind of stylish. So, and so I tried to really create like a very good looking show about
right,
and also a show that people could really understand and actually would also see what incredible work these people were doing, some, you know, as you know, sometimes 30, 40 years without being recognized for anything. And now we all profit from them, basically.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Yeah, there's a yeah. lot of inspiration in what's come from these underground psychedelic yeah. leaders, yeah. right? Stan Grof, for example, Rick Doblin, of course, you know, there's a long list of these scientists and advocates and personal explorers. It's so great that they're finally getting some recognition yeah. and having a stage to come out on, whether it's on podcasts like this or yours or on the Psychedelic Sciences Conference. There's multiple platforms mm-hmm. around the world where these are happening. It's about time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Well, very cool that your show exists. Again, obviously our show is similar in the sense that we're like, how can we amplify voices? Yeah. How can we amplify stories? What are the healing experiences that we have all had, right? If we don't have the scientific evidence, body of evidence that we need for legal change or these types of things yet, but we're working toward it, how can we fill the zeitgeist with stories and anecdotal evidence of people's lives being utterly transformed by this work, by this healing work? And so that's a big reason why we exist, is for that reason, which makes me want to ask more about your own healing journey. You know, like, what else contributed to your, I mean, we could talk about psychedelics all day, and if it's more psychedelics, maybe ayahuasca, maybe this, I don't know what you've done, what experiences you've had. Maybe there are other modalities that you've engaged in that have been a part of your healing, you know, journey, your healing experiences, because that's partly what we want to share here too.
Yeah, I mean, I started with, I mean, LSD almost like accidentally, but I thought it was incredible. It's actually time to do it again, maybe, right?
it's calling but, your name. perfect,
but,
perfect.
After this, I did truffles in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And I think this is when the real journey actually began, because in this particular truffle journey with synthesis back then, it was at the end of the trip and often like...
Can we clarify for the audience the truffle journey? This is psilocybin.
But yes, it's just that they call truffles in the Netherlands, but I mean, they are mushrooms, basically. Mm-hmm. So, and in this journey, roughly 2 or 3 weeks later, which was already in the pandemic, so in this very weird time anyway, I found out, or like my brain remembered, that I had a very, very, very serious childhood trauma at the age of 7. Which I had forgotten for probably 30 years. Mm. So, and, or like this weird thing where somebody would tell you, oh, you remember when this and this happened to you? But that's, you might want to think about it, but then even you would say, yeah, but that's so long ago, and like, whatever, who cares? It wasn't that bad, but it was really bad. And and then this was the first step of me like remembering this thing. And then because it was the pandemic, you couldn't leave the country. And so I found a ketamine treatment in Berlin because I wanted to keep working on my kind of insight. So it was, the streets were empty. I drove every Tuesday in an Uber to a ketamine clinic.
It's amazing.
I have to, I mean, it sounds almost like a Hollywood movie again. But it was very interesting because it was almost like, okay, this is the future. You're just going every Tuesday to a ketamine treatment to work on your stuff. And this helped me even work around further with the topic. And then when it was possible again to go back to the Netherlands, I did, I think, another two truffle experiences. And it brought me to the topic of not having children and why that was, and that it was actually really something that I regretted. So, and I could never really access the feeling of regretting it. Not regretting in a sense that, you know, that I would have a depression because of this, but I realized that it meant actually a lot to me. So, and that allowed me to, this insight allowed me to maybe find things that would replace this. And in my trips, I always have children. It's like in every trip I have children. So that was also very interesting to see. So I worked on that for quite a while. And then last, I think in summer 22, I was part of a study from an American university with a, where it was really about a very high dose of psilocybin, higher than usual. And
can you clarify how much that was for
40 milligram truffles. So for, that's four, yeah. For four me, grams, it was very high. So for other people, it's like, whatever.
Yep.
For me, it was high.
And that's high for me, so too.
It was, I mean, it was the first experience of a total ego death. And this trauma thing came really back, like, really, like, as a visual. But the first time in a way that I could, like, let it go and not pay attention. I mean, pay attention to it, but it was, suddenly it was gone in the trip. But that year after this experience was the year, and that talking about 2023, where if I want to make it short, I really had no idea who I was anymore without the trauma. And I had many moments when I was like, this person would do this, this other person would do this. And it was quite a weird year because of that. And I think this is also part of your healing journey that you have to reinvent another person almost.
Yeah.
Because the traumatized person doesn't engage in certain things anymore, doesn't have certain friendships anymore, doesn't have certain relationships anymore, and so on. And of course, I also, you know, realized, well, this, so now I also have this information and I need to let it go also out of my system and body, which brought me to the insight that I had quite a bit of a PTSD kind of, I had moments where I realized I have PTSD reactions.
Yeah.
Which I never had thought of before. Like, for example, very simple, if I would be in a subway in Berlin, like I would be super nervous suddenly people coming close to me, although they were just standing, like, because it was full. And I never knew why I was so aggregated, like annoyed.
Yeah, like your body would be activated.
Yeah, and I was like, they don't do anything.
That, yep.
They're just, and so suddenly I was like, wait, oh, this is also maybe connected to this trauma thing.
Yeah.
And then in November last year, I did the first round of an MDMA therapy, which I will continue with a kind of a little bit like the MAPS protocol with two therapists. And to be quite honest, I think this was, to me, really a big step because I felt like the truffles had brought me the information and had me remembered what was important to me, what also what had happened to me. And the MDMA delivered and I mean, I just did the first round. It delivered a very interesting form of freedom from this experience and from this thing. And again, like the first weeks where I was really exhausted, my body was like letting go of everything. And then at one point it was like, okay, now it's time for the new person. So it was really interesting how this PTSD elements that I had were just disappearing. At least I was aware of them suddenly. So that's my own journey.
The uncharted territory of becoming the new person. Before we go there, I just want to thank you for sharing that,
for all that you're sharing
and touch on the not having children thing, because that's very resonant and present for me as an individual right now, where only because of my experiences with plant medicines and healing deeply and going into places and spaces in myself where I could actually feel the deep sadness in my body and actually cry, and just get all of that, be allowed to feel. We joke on the podcast a lot. Jay mentions it a lot about how I've said, I am not afraid of my feelings. And that's only because I've had to go to my feelings and really be with them. And I had the safe space in which to do that. Why I talk about that is to relate it to this current experience of like me looking at, because I'm 46 years old. Theoretically, I could still have a child, like my body functions, but it's the end is near. You know what I mean? And it's a thing. It's a real thing for women. Not all women want children. They feel very clear about it. But I do think that it's a shared pain that a lot of us have to work through for people who maybe didn't choose it or didn't end up that way or that having that experience in their life. Anyway, I point to that because I hope it resonates for people listening, but also that for me, it was a thing where like I could feel the, oh God, I'm a little afraid to even look at this because I'm going to be fucking sad about it. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, oh, I don't even want to go there because I'm going to feel so fucking sad and there won't be anything I can do about it. You know, so it's like been a brave step for me to even start looking at that and start talking about it. So I appreciate you sharing that piece on top of the other stuff. So, yeah, that's all. But I mean,
how Mel, the part you're talking about right now with the sadness, right? And there's a stigma in culture that only positive emotions should be allowed.
Correct. True.
Right. So we have this compartmentalization that happens when there's scary, hard, painful, sad, anything that's in this like negative profile of emotion. We're kind of taught to like compartmentalize it all and push it down or not feel it, not allow it. And I feel like, Anne, what you were saying there about how the trauma informs us in a subconscious way where we're like, we start to block out parts of who we are based on the experiences that we've had. And we're like, okay, now that I've had this, you know, hard experience, which I haven't processed, I have never allowed it to occur.
Yeah.
It's now putting me in a box of what I do allow into my life and what I don't allow in. And I love how you touched on how certain psychedelics, ones that are kind of this openers, say a mescaline or LSD or a psilocybin or an ayahuasca, might open up our mind to an idea of changing our perspective on them. And what you said about how MDMA, when you started that therapy, I can deeply relate to this in the sense that from my own experience, I encountered psilocybin and LSD long before MDMA came along. And they allowed me to expand my vision. They allowed me to say, oh, wow, I could see this differently. I could see this as a gift. Or I could see this as like a, this was actually for me in a way where I'm supposed to learn from it. But I don't know how to integrate. I don't know how to allow it because my body's never had the chance to be okay with these things. And then the MDMA comes along and says, you know what? it's all okay.
Right.
It's all okay. And right. We're able to love that part of ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also like, I mean, so, I remember there was this one party at Wonderland, one of the conferences. And I mean, it was, you know, how it is in Miami. It was warm. It was 4 a.m. at night. It was a really nice party. The whole community was there. And I realized, wow, I always had this very bad feeling around nightlife, although I was out a lot here in Berlin, because it was always like connected to dramatic kind of events, or people got into, you know, like it was, it had kind of a very negative, destructive flavor. And then this one night, I mean, it was, I think it was 21 probably to 22.
Thank you for listening. If you're receiving value from this episode, we would love it if you would show your support for the show by subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Instagram. You can click the like button, leave us a comment, or share the podcast with somebody directly.
Every month, we host integration coaching circles. These are safely held spaces for those looking to heal, grow, and connect in community. They are beautiful. Alive. So much good work is happening. You are invited to join us. Go to trustthejourney.today/integration. You can join the Trust the Journey family, which includes these integration coaching circles and our private Facebook group where we connect and support each other. Sign up by going to our website, trustthejourney.today, obviously, and click on the orange Patreon button.
Now, it's your support and engagement that make the show possible. We love connecting with you. So feel free to DM us anytime on Instagram with your thoughts at trustthejourney.today. And now I'm back to our regularly scheduled programming.
And Sandy, I was like, wow, this is how it feels when there's a community that is enjoying each other. And it is an incredible joy around this dance floor, and everybody likes each other. I mean, of course, people had done psychedelics, but still, I mean, it was such a game changer for me to perceive myself also different in a situation like this, where before it was like, oh, you know, kind of the longer the night went on, the more problems arose between couples, and people got divorces after these, you know, wild years in Berlin and all of this. And suddenly it was like, wow, this feels very different. It feels, and also I felt very different. And this is the first time where I realized that this is actually the feeling without the trauma.
So
this is the comparison between a night fueled by depressants and stimulants, versus a night fueled, or an evening fueled by, you know, mind expanding entheogens.
Heart opening, stuff like that. Sure.
Yeah.
Wow, beautiful. I mean, I think it's an interesting thing, the concept, the part of the conversation of, okay, now what does it look like for me to be and step into and bring intentionality to being this new person, without this trauma, with this healing, acknowledging that it is unusual and will feel strange, not necessarily bad, to your point.
Strange.
You're having strange, unusual, because we've never experienced it in our adult consciousness. What have you brought to your own integration? You know what I mean? Like, what has your integration looked like? You're having these aha moments, these insights, the recognition of this change in you. How are you amplifying that, just bringing intentionality to it so that it grows and your mind continues to open and your life experience continues to open in these ways that you're enjoying?
Yeah, and I think the biggest, it's interesting you ask that, because the biggest exercise that comes out of this for me, and even more with MDMA, is to give up independence. And that kind of independence that is connected to PTSD, which was often very handy as a reporter and journalist. I was on the way also to become a war reporter at one point. I volunteered for this. So, which means like you disconnect from pretty much everything. And so, so what I'm doing now is, and I think this is where the MDMA specifically supported me. And again, like I have another two sessions to go, but so this, so what happens if I don't act like a, like an uber independent person?
Right.
So, which is probably how human beings are. No, you know, people are dependent on each other. But here's the thing. For me, I needed to find a difference between being codependent and being connected to people. So my big task is to work on a daily basis, or to observe also on a daily basis, what is connection and what is codependency? And what is this uber, independency? Like, I can do everything by myself. Which, funny enough, as we know in the pandemic, at one point we learned we can't do anything alone. And then at the same time, I started a podcast alone. I was like, yeah, see, you can do it. You can do this alone. But now, so, you know, we're back in a different situation. I really, really try with everything I do, also connected to the podcast, connected to the next steps that we're working on, to actively seek support and ask people for help. But not help like, you know, like annoying help, like like real support. That is also interesting for them, or where they say, oh God, I'm so happy to support you in this. So, and actually I have very good friends in New York that I just stayed with. And so they were like, you can stay as long as you want. And I was like, yeah. And they were like, you can stay as long as you want.
Right. And we're going to get through the independent wall. Right,
and it was, it's very, very funny with them because we have this, you know, conversation about this. So, but this is, to me, this is the biggest, I don't know, the for me personally, the biggest achievement to really say, like, I'm not independent and I don't want to be. It's boring. It's exhausting. I don't, it doesn't, it's not also not a lot of fun. So this is my daily practice.
Do you think this is a separation from our ego mind?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think in modern culture, one of the things that we're taught by society is to be this individual, to be an ego, right? Where it's all about self and how strong or how independent, how can it, resilient can I be? And this whole concept, I think psychedelics, thank you, psychedelics, for pulling down these walls of we're all connected. We're all on this journey together. We're all one big experience that is happening. And even right now, this simple act of sharing, of leaning into a story and saying, hey, I thought I was this, but actually I'm not. This tearing down of the wall of ego and opening allows others to feel safe to peer over their own wall.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And to go, maybe I could take a few bricks out of this wall too, you know?
Yeah. And it's like, even in the beginning in the podcast, when, you know, when I didn't meet anybody because of the pandemic and people just listened to the podcast, a lot of people were writing, yeah, because you were talking about this in the show, or like, because you were saying that you had trauma and you were looking for ways to go through it. I was actually also feeling like, okay, maybe I can do that too. Or like, I just met this a guy who has a really big law firm here who wants to do an event with us. And he was like, introducing himself, like very serious, from Harvard. And he was like, and I also have anxiety. It was really funny because it was like the second thing
and
he
I'm
said.
Human. Harvard, yeah. Harvard, but also
Harvard
anxiety.
And anxiety. And I was like, this is so great. I love this, that he was so, you know, he said that. And he was like very relieved that he could say it, that it wasn't like, oh, don't tell me about Harvard, but not about your anxiety, kind of.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's this notion of being a whole person.
Yeah.
You know, it's go ahead, Jay, go ahead. It looks like you have a thought.
Yeah, it's so much easier to connect to each other and to feel okay with being ourselves if we take the armor off right away at the beginning of the conversation. You know, I was just in a a very serious couple days of business retreat, and we had a facilitator, and we're working hard on, you know, working through the next steps in the development of this business. And one of the practices we were doing, which was super helpful, was like, before we even start a sentence or say, the story I'm telling myself right now is, and say, I feel like you're probably going to reject what I'm about to say, but here's what I'm about to say. And as soon as we put that piece out there that takes down, says, here's the story I'm, you know, that I'm living in right now, then everybody else goes, well, yeah, I'm living in a story right now too. Guess what?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel human. I feel connected.
Yeah, totally. And go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, I mean, and it's interesting, like it's almost like, I think, like you have this little game with yourself. Yeah, you go into situations that you know from your past. I mean, I'd just been to the 60th birthday of one of my best friends, and a lot of people from my media past were there. And I mean, it's nice to see them, but the whole night I was thinking, why was I in this world? What did I want to do there? What was I looking for? And not like, you know, to hate myself that I was there, because of course I was at least in LA, I was in Hollywood, but still it was something that now to me would be very foreign to be in, like, in a classic journalist position. And and that is always very interesting, to put yourself into situations that seem to be your life or like familiar to you. And then you're like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah. Jay and I have talked about that a lot. We have a lot of gratitude and a lot of awareness now, because both of us we're professional skydivers at the world level.
Oh,
like,
wow.
We're highly accomplished professional athletes in skydiving and extreme sports. And so it's a thing to now be very deeply immersed in our own healing journeys and reflect what brought us to those spaces and be grateful for how it saved us in many respects early on, because it gave us at least somewhat healthier avenue for addictive tendencies and necessary and needed connection with other people and community. So it's like, it's interesting, because I feel very, 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 very differently about my relationship to skydiving as a sport, but also I feel very differently about my relationship to the community, even though I have deep gratitude. But like, I also am like, I don't want to go hang out at the drop zone and do a bunch of jumps anymore. That's just not where I'm at in my life. And I'm okay with that too. But I think that's a very normal thing, to move forward from the things that used to define us, that used to consume our lives. Yeah, it's a thing.
It is, Sam.
I've had a conversation with a good mutual friend of ours, Mel, this morning. I was talking with Kara about this exact topic, where like, we look back at versions of ourself at previous chapters in our lives, and I'm almost like, I almost don't even recognize myself.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, who is the person
who
in that story before the latest transformation or the latest timeline jump, where we've shifted from one version of ourself to a new version of ourself? And now that old energy, that old vibration, it just isn't us anymore. It's who we used to be, it's just not who we are.
But what I found really fascinating is that this is exactly the moment to the connection to longevity, because I feel like once the bunch of trauma stones have come off your, I don't know, system or soul or body, like, I mean, I'm able to experience excitement, joy, and obsession, like in a positive way, with things that I did not really have before. Like, and I can connect also with people in a very different way. Like, I mean, suddenly I remembered like how often, even on parties where I knew everybody, I could never like attach to a group and have a conversation, which means I was obviously very much dissociating. Without knowing at the time, of course, that I did that. But what I remembered is that I was like, I couldn't connect to a group even if I knew the people. So and I find now, in this, once you start to realize that, okay, this is a part of you that was trauma that might have left your body also and at some point, or you're on the way to kick it out.
So, yeah, totally. Well, it's, you know, and it shows up big in big ways and little ways, right? You know, we can see those big seismic shifts of I don't even recognize myself anymore. And I literally just told my partner this morning. I said to him, I was like, because I used to feel we recently moved in together, not even 6 months ago.
Okay.
And I was feeling a lot of anxiety just being in our home. You know, just like, I'm a little nervous to just be around and I'm not taking up too much space, like just stuff that was in my body. And there's no reason for me to feel that really theoretically. And so anyway, I just recently came back from my last 3-day ayahuasca ceremony worked a lot on deep stuff. And anxiety was the main intention was, why do I feel this sort of deeper undertone of anxiety? I'm going to leave that there as a teaser for future episodes. I'm not going to go into the giant share around that. But I just told Ken this morning, I was like, I don't feel that anxiety in our home anymore. I feel perfectly fine sitting here, being around you, talking to you, not talking to you. It's a notable shift and it seems small, but that was like it's like one of those real life impacts that in my world is very obvious.
Yeah.
And I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
I'd like to know what is exciting you right now? Like what is in the future in your mind? Like what's inspiring you? What's on your plate? Where are you going? And now that you've had these, you know, previous versions of self, you're looking back at the versions that are no longer you, what does the future version of yourself look like? What do you see yourself doing? What's important?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is really like starting very meaningful collaborations with people that I met in the last couple of, maybe the last year, like for example, the people who run Neue House in New York. So we're planning a really big event there together, more about this soon, with other also great collaborators. So this is the one thing. I'm really looking actively for people that help me to make the show bigger, like the way more, also more professionalized, how to run a newsletter, you know, all of these technical things that I realize if I engage other people, it's a really good idea, and I really feel how fast these things are growing. So this is one thing that is very exciting for me. And but I personally have two major excitements. So the one thing is really I almost feel like I'm going on a world tour with the podcast.
Yeah, so, cool.
Specifically doing
that.
Events in New York. Probably at Neue House, maybe
guess
somewhere
else
too.
Guess who's coming?
You guys have to come. And then same with LA. And then I just started a collaboration also. Like, thankfully, I was able to be part of the new foundation from the Imperial College in London that is kind of looking into art and science and how art and science and culture could support psychedelic research. So we're just working on a couple of events. Super exciting to me because, I mean, I think the Imperial College is one of the great universities for this. And a lot of my friends are there now, like Tommaso Barba and David Arizzo. And then Berlin, of course, is also under radar, where we do something with Fotografiska, which is also connected to Neue Haus. So I really, really like the idea of creating as much physical meetings with people and kind of community meetings and live podcasts as possible, because this is always when the greatest things are happening, new connections are being built, and people really can exchange their experiences or just kind of meet other people that they can talk to about their healing journey, and they don't need to feel weird because they just have done a trip or something. So this is something that I'm really, really excited about. And the second one that really came out also of the last couple of months, but if I'm honest, it started when I was 12 years old because my parents, my mother and my stepdad, they were thinking really hard to move to Israel when I was 12. And we lived 2 months in a kibbutz and they wanted to become teachers. And I was really excited to live in a kibbutz. And then we had to go back to Germany. They didn't make that decision, but for some reason, I felt a very strong connection to this culture. And maybe also then, of course, at one point I realized, well, Germans obviously have a responsibility to look into this thing that they, you know, created, like the Holocaust.
Right.
So it, right. Since I was that age, it always came back to me in school and in very different variations. And then when I started to psychedelic experience in many trips I did, the topic came back to me where in my trip I was in a concentration camp, not as an inmate or like a Nazi, but I was there. I was observing everything. I was looking at everything. So, and I had a lot of conversations about this with Rachel Yehuda, who's doing research about this. And of course, Rick Doblin in a podcast, we talked about this, which was a very important moment for me to talk to these two people about this, because I realized, wow, this is in all Germans or in all people, especially Germans, is this trauma too, that they have created this, I don't even know how to call it, like, mass extermination.
Right.
And, but also, they still can't take, they don't seem to be able to take responsibility because they can't do it because they can't look into their trauma. They become, Germans become very angry if you try to talk to them about this. So long story short, I realized because of the psychedelic engagement and experiences, I realized that this is a really, really strong thing. And then, of course, October 7th happening, it's getting a round of re-traumatization. So that's why we're just looking into preparing to open a foundation around intergenerational trauma and how psychedelics could probably support a healing process with this. And it will start with the question around the Jewish community because it is just a community that I seem to be in. And in psychedelics, there are also a lot of people from that community that I'm have become really good friends with, and but even before. So, and for some reason, I feel this is something I'd really like to bring into the public. And for the first time, I feel very, I mean, I want to say confident to do this because I know I experienced by myself that it was something that was also in me, still kind of working in me. And I, to be quite honest, I still don't know if I'm Jewish myself. I'm still in the process of finding out. But that doesn't matter so much. I think the most important thing is that psychedelics showed me that this is something that people can actually eventually use as a healing tool. And just a couple of days ago, I did a podcast that's going to come on next week with a foundation called A Safe Heart, kind of a big foundation in the meantime in Israel, who helps the victims of the rave, you know, that the people who got attacked by Hamas at the rave. And so how, and as you know, they were, some of them were doing psychedelics because they were on a rave. So eventually they were attacked while being on a trip. So, and of course, it's almost like they need some extra, very specific care because it can be such an incredible moment where they might see intergenerational visuals, where they see, I don't know, like other things that seem to be like, oh, it's not so bad. I'm just getting attacked. I'm just going to run. Like, so it's such a weird setup, but at the same time, this organization is really doing exactly this, what we should do with psychedelics, like really helping people to get over something that they probably would not be able to even touch on, like in the months to come. So, and if I see that, what they're doing, I feel even more secure in myself to really open this foundation, because it is really something that is also bothering me, if I can say this, in terms of Germany, because the right-wing party is on the rise. And of course, then most people say, yeah, but that's over the world. But it is all over the world. But it is something else in Germany, because it has this deep-rooted trauma that people really don't want to look into. So we really need psychedelics for Germany, I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much for bringing it this specific topic, because intergenerational trauma and lineage healing and repairing our DNA and actually going into who we are on the spiritual level and digging deep into our souls and looking at where the pains lie that are not ours, but are our mother and father's, our grandmother and grandfather's, and our great-grandmother's and great-grandfather's pains. These are passed down through our DNA, whether we like it or not. And it's our responsibilities to step up and say, I'm carrying this pain and this trauma, and it expresses itself through the way that I am and the way that I act and how I receive. And it's on us to do the work to fix those parts of ourself that are still in pain and give them a place to be heard and felt and healed. So, wow, thank you.
But I mean, also it's interesting that without these trips, I mean, another example, like, I mean, I was kind of weirdly interested in this topic always, and like also because we almost moved to Israel. But I mean, also because I felt like so many other topics we talked about, like I felt something in my body that was connected to this topic. And then right in the first psilocybin trip at in the Netherlands back then, it was pretty early on in the trip that in the trip I walked with a rabbi through Auschwitz and we had a conversation. And
wow.
So, and but as you know, in a trip you have a very different conversation than you would have in a, if you meet a real rabbi and you walk with him through Auschwitz, you don't have a conversation. You're just probably not going to say anything. So,
right.
And suddenly in these trips,
it's the deep knowing.
I'm sorry.
It's the deep knowing.
Yeah, it's like you would not say, hey, how was your day? Like, you know, you would not have a conversation.
It's transcendental,
exactly.
Right? It's happening through a transfer of consciousness.
So, and then in all of these trips, I mostly had experiences that made me, I mean, you could say like a witness, like an observant. And I even had in the podcast with Gabor Mate, talked to him about this. And he said to me like, yeah, maybe this is your worst idea of confinement, to live in a concentration camp. And there was something to it. But in the last year, I realized, no, there's really more to it. It is really like there is this responsibility from this generation, my generation, to kind of cut this intergenerational burden and to really have people being sad about that Germany has created the Holocaust and not just, well, let's get angry because I can't hear anything about it anymore. So just a conversation is very, I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy for me now, but I can have the conversation now.
It's powerful. So, it's powerful. I listened to the episode with Gabor Mate, the one that you're referencing.
Yeah.
It's a really excellent episode. I think something that you're pointing to also that's really important relative to healing, relative to intergenerational trauma, relative to our own growing self-awareness is this idea that things will recur and we will automatically dismiss and or undervalue those messages. Oh, that's not about me. I didn't live through that. Oh, that's not mine. Oh, it's not really anything. But then for you to be like, oh, wow, it actually, there's more to this than I realized. That is a very common refrain for people doing deeper healing work, and certainly deeper healing work with psychedelics is like, this kept coming up, this, because it might not be the ceremony to address X, Y, Z thing, but X, Y, Z thing keeps coming up. And it's like, okay, when am I going to, I'm going to actually look at X, Y, Z thing. And I'm just sort of broadly looking at it. But that's what I feel like I hear you describing in this. And it's a big deal. And now you're founding a foundation to look into intergenerational trauma. This is a big deal. And I acknowledge you for the persistence around a thought that you originally would have dismissed.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, I mean, you know how it is. You kind of, I mean, you see, you have the same reaction. Like, you, like, I remember in school, you had the topic came in very various, you know, like in German class, in history class, in religion. Like, it was always like in every part of the school, the topic was addressed to the point where I remember this very well. Like, people in my school were saying, oh God, I can't listen to it anymore. It's just like, okay, I get the message now. It was really bad. So, and, but then, like, you want to put it away and say, like, well, I mean, this is long time ago. Like you say, it's long time ago. It wasn't me. It's not my fault. But it's in your body, unfortunately.
Right. But so, it's still there.
It's still there. Yeah. So this is what this is.
There's these layers. Some trauma like the Holocaust, which is affected the entire planet.
Of course,
we're talking about a scale of an incident where every single person on Earth has had an effect of this. And then there's, like, that's the macro. And then on the micro, we have our individual, what we might call smaller traumas, right? Something that's more specific to us that we've had an individual experience. But we have these same reactions to them where we're like, yeah, that happened. And now I'm just going to put it on a shelf and I'm going to not think about it anymore. And I'm like, oh, it's not affecting me. Yeah. I'm telling myself this story that it's not affecting me anymore because I've put it on a shelf and I've managed to at least put, you know, some kind of distance between myself and whatever it might be. But it does not mean that we've healed it yet. And I love where we're going with this conversation and the work that you're doing in respect to the fact that we're going to go back and pick these items off of our proverbial shelf and look at them more deeply and say, where do we still have work to do around this? And how can we as a people and as an individual start making this more commonplace of a conversation that we need to continue returning to our points of pain until they are no longer a pain and they're a lesson and they're something we can be grateful for having learned.
And I mean, of course, in America, there are other intergenerational topics, you know, like, as we know, but
so many,
and
so many.
every nation, country. I mean, although, I mean, America is also quite a bit affected by the Holocaust. Like, I just had this conversation with a friend of mine from Switzerland, and he was a Jew from Europe, and he was like, oh, in Europe, there's anti-Semitism, so I'm going to America because it's great. There's no anti-Semitism. Then October 7th happens, and he's like, well, I thought I would be okay here, but now the thing is coming back to me. So it's a very interesting kind of new insight, a new way of looking at things that I think it's one of the biggest tasks the psychedelic community can have is to really deliver these kind of new ways of looking at things. And I just had also in New York, I had a conversation with Carl Hart and podcast. And so we same thing. Like, I mean, even if you would say like, yeah, I'm Carl Hart, I'm this super cool professor in Columbia, it wouldn't be possible because his whole story is always with him. So, and so is it. So it's the thing with Germans. It's like they have to acknowledge that they were doing this. So it's just very interesting to me.
Well, Anne, I love everything that we've been talking about today. As we head toward closing, want to ask a lighter question about, because I think part of what we want to do here too is, amplify voices that are already out there, that are already in the conversation. And another thing that we want to do is be examples for people who want to, quote unquote, come out of the psychedelic closet and enter the conversation. Maybe they don't have a platform. Maybe they don't think they're anybody. Maybe they think their voice won't make a difference. Or all the, you know, there's plenty of people that, you know, of us that maybe were in those shoes at one point. What advice or what would you say to somebody who's listening, who's like, man, I really want to be out there with the fact that I believe in this, or I want to share more of my healing journey to be in service, what would you say to those people? And again, it's not necessarily that they're wanting to start a podcast. Maybe it's they just want to start talking to their families, or they open a conversation with their partner or whatever. Would you say to that?
Now that I hear you talking, what came to my mind was this really great initiative, Drugs Over Dinner. Maybe you guys know this. It's kind of an initiative that you can actually download, let's say, a paper on their website with a couple of guidelines if you wanted to have a dinner with your friends or your family and start a conversation on drugs, meaning in our case, psychedelics. And I thought, this is such a great idea to just starting with if it's possible, with your family. And I think people who are on a longer journey, most of them had at one point told parents and other parts of the family. I found it always interesting that hardly anybody was saying, oh, it was a really bad idea to say this. I mean, of course, in the beginning, it might have been a little weird, but even I can say that when I started to talk about this to my mother, she wasn't even saying like, oh, this is super weird. She started to talk to her friends about ketamine therapy. That's the first thing she did. And then also like who's her best friend, whose children, one of their daughters was taking SSRIs forever. And so she was kind of opening a conversation with her friend about her daughter that she might want to look into other things. So I think it's a really interesting experiment to talk to your family first in a completely new way. And this Drugs Over Dinner thing, it's a super nice idea and great support to download the PDF and then just have a conversation about drugs over dinner.
I love this one thing.
But why not starting a podcast? I mean, today, the great thing is today it's so easy to put out content. I mean, there's so many tools compared to even like 5 years ago, I feel. Newsletters for free, podcasts for free. So, there should be as much podcast as possible if it comes to me. So, because
that's how we roll.
Yeah, but also how many people have told me like, yeah, and then I heard Joe Rogan talking about mushrooms and I was like, I should try this. Mm-hmm. So it really has an effect on people in a way, just listening to a podcast more than coming from your government or from your doctors. I mean, you know, like from the healthcare system that is still
absolutely
very behind these things. So I mean, yeah, the more people talk about it, the better it is, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Completely agree. Jaya, do you have any final thoughts before we ask Anne to share where people can find her and all those things? Any final thoughts?
As always, I like to start and end with gratitude. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much, Anne, for being on our show and for sharing your story and for the work that you're doing.
Thank you, guys.
And where can our audience find more about you and what your work is and everything you're up to?
Yeah, so the podcast is called The New Health Club. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, mostly, and on the website. The foundation is still in the making. Of course, there will be news about this on LinkedIn, I guess, the first place always. Then the website, of course, is thenewhealthclub.co at the moment. We might have to change it to NL, but it should be CO. And soon we also, starting April, we relaunching our newsletter. And that's very exciting because also one of the editors is also based in New York. And we really want to turn it into a specific, almost like extra medium besides the podcast. It doesn't announce anymore just a podcast, but we will refer to retreats. We will sell products that you can buy already, like Kana or like Sentia, the drink that David Nutt from Imperial College was designing.
Wait.
And so I'm very excited about that. So, but of course, this is in the making. And then, of course, all these live events that we're doing. So I think LinkedIn will be always a great place to find these. And the newsletter, of course.
And what's your tag on?
My LinkedIn is just my name, Anna Filippi. So we will always post everything that is coming up as a live event. And but I think the podcast, these live events, and the newsletter and the foundation. So this, my aim is really to create this kind of little empire.
This
psychedelic empire.
So, well, I, for one, am very excited about your New York
development. Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to go back.
Very much present. I look forward to giving you another hug. I agree with Jay. Thank you so much
for being here.
We believe very deeply that your sharing makes a difference. And so you're obviously leading in that way in the world. And just thank you so much for spending your time and bringing your energy and your heart and your truth to us and to everyone listening.
Thank you so much. It was a really great conversation. I really enjoyed it. And also that I could be.
Yeah, thank you.
More outspoken about things. I really like that too.
Such a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, seriously, for listening, for spending your valuable, valuable time, energy, and heart with us. Every bit of it makes a difference.
Yeah, thank you. We would love it if you could show your support for the show by subscribing on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, or follow us on Instagram. You can always click the like button, leave us a comment, or share an episode with somebody directly.
Like we mentioned, every month we host integration coaching circles. So, so much good work is happening there. You are invited to join us. Go to trustthejourney.today/integration. The Trust the Journey family includes these integration coaching circles and our private Facebook group where we connect and support each other. Join us by going to our website, trustthejourney.today, and click the orange Patreon button.
Yeah, thanks. It's your support and engagement that make the show possible. Thank you. We're here to connect with you. Feel free to DM us anytime on Instagram. We're at trustthejourney.today. Thank you. We love you.
We love you.
Keep laughing, keep loving, and keep trusting the journey.